Before I begin this week's program, I would like to make two important announcements. The first announcement is in regard to the Whatever Happened to Pizza at McDonald's Patreon. This week, I premiered a new adults-only podcast exclusively for Patreon patrons called Investigative Journalism After Dark. On this show, I apply my skills as an investigative journalist to topics only appropriate for an adult audience, such as cigarettes, etc. New episodes of Investigative Journalism After Dark will be released bi-weekly, along with the existing Patreon-exclusive show, Intriguing Conversations. Now, Patreon patrons have the privilege to enjoy a new episode of an exclusive podcast each and every week. To sign up, please visit patreon.com/pizzaatmcd's. My second important announcement is in regard to the new Whatever Happened to Pizza at McDonald's merchandise store at TeePublic. Enjoy attractive Whatever Happened to Pizza at McDonald's related designs on a variety of high-quality items, including t-shirts, mugs, protective face masks, and other items. I particularly recommend the fantasy film crossover sequel Throw Pillow, which allows you to decorate your home with original art from the fantasy film sequel I have conceived but am not allowed to legally name on my store. To browse the new wares, please visit TeePublic, that is TeePublic.com/pizzaatmcd's. Thank you. Welcome to Whatever Happened to Pizza at McDonald's, the podcast where I ask the question, whatever happened to the pizza at McDonald's? I'm your host, Brian Thompson. Last week, I spoke with a former McDonald's employee named Aunt Bev, who bravely blew the proverbial whistle concerning certain managers abusing handicapped parking privileges. While this interview was disappointingly short on new information related to McDonald's pizza, Aunt Bev did tell me of an institution about which I had never heard before. According to her, the McDonald's Corporation operates a kind of training camp for their most elite operatives called Hamburger University. With the help of the Google.com information service, I was able to confirm that this intelligence is, in fact, true. And since Hamburger University has been in operation since well before the heyday of McDonald's pizza, it stands to reason that at some point it offered courses on pizza management. According to public records, Hamburger University issued certifications in customer service, food handling, business leadership, and even a bachelor's degree in a discipline called hamburgerology. But these records are rather recent, so it is very likely they do not reflect any historical pizza-related courses, even if they were available. I decided it was worth the risk to my personal health to travel to Oak Brook, Illinois, the home of Hamburger University's main campus, to search the building for any vintage pizza training ovens or discarded textbooks related to McDonald's pizza manufacture. But just as I was about to order a lab coat so that I could pose as a doctor and receive a quick pre-flight vaccine dose, I learned that the Oak Brook Hamburger University campus had been moved. A short time ago, the McDonald's Corporation opened a new world headquarters in a Chicago, Illinois building that formerly played host to Harpo Productions. The word Harpo is, of course, demon language for Oprah, which is the name of the building's previous owner. And apparently, she required quite a bit of space for her productions, as the building is now housing not just the McDonald's corporate offices, but all currently operating Hamburger University classes. Thankfully, the original Hamburger University location, which was in operation during the heyday of McDonald's pizza, has not been completely abandoned to the elements. Given her druthers, Mother Nature can be a cruel caretaker of facilities such as this. Tree roots have a tendency to seek out the residual warmth of old pizza ovens, and packs of wolves can survive for months eating just a few chapters of a moldy pizza manufacturer textbook. But in 2019, the former Hamburger University campus was purchased by a man named John Paul DeJoria, no relation to to the late Pope. It now serves as a base of operation for Mr. DeGioia's premium hair care products company, Paul Mitchell. I am no expert, but I cannot believe shampoo manufacture can possibly take up more than a few rooms. One for extracting essential oils, one for bottling, and one for vicious animal experiments. If so, it is very likely whatever forgotten corners of the former Hamburger University campus once played host to the pizza courses have remained unmolested. But as I confirmed my mailing address for the aforementioned lab coat I would use to receive a COVID vaccine, I realized there is one potential hurdle to my being admitted to the Paul Mitchell Company headquarters. I am quite hairless. This was not always the case. In fact, I was once awarded the prestigious title of Best Hair at the small animal hospice where I volunteer. But a few years ago, I came down with a mild case of very aggressive cancer. Though I am legally prohibited from saying whether or not it was purposefully given to me by anyone having anything to do with any fast food company, I can say that the treatment resulted in almost total hair loss. At first, I considered this an inconvenience, as my shower drain became quite clogged. But I quickly realized the benefits outweighed the downsides. With much less hair, I no longer had to worry about styling my coif after bolting out of bed to flee any potential overnight assassination attempts. Plus, I found my swimming speed improved to an almost statistically significant degree. And since losing my hair, I almost never come down with an infestation of lice. So even after my treatment, I kept my well-shorn look. Were I to infiltrate a premium hair care company in this state, I would immediately be treated with the utmost suspicion. As a mostly bald American, I am not the Paul Mitchell Company's target audience. Therefore, there is little chance I will ever give them any of my money. Therefore, in their eyes, I am probably tantamount to a subhuman. Thankfully, there are some services which purport to treat people with hair conditions very similar to mine. So, I moved that lab coat from my online shopping cart to my saved-for-later bin and attempted to arrange a hair replacement procedure.
Thank you for calling Bosley, the most experienced name in hair restoration.
Bosley Patient Services, how may I help you?
Hello, my name is Brian Thompson, and I am interested in hair restoration. I was wondering if I could speak with someone who could explain the procedure to me.
Okay, well, I mean, I can give you just the general information on that. Were you interested in the, you know, which procedure you're interested in? Are you interested in the follicular unit extraction or the follicular unit transplantation?
What is the difference between the extraction and the transplantation?
Okay, the difference is how the grafts are being harvested. So with the transplantation, that's the more traditional one where we cut a linear segment of tissue from the back of your scalp.
Did you say they cut a piece of tissue from the back of my scalp?
Yeah, from the back of your head. They'll cut a piece of skin with the hair follicles on it from the back of your head. And then what they do is they suture that back up so you're left with a thin linear scar. Once that skin, that tissue is removed, they separate that into different grafts, and then those grafts are transplanted to where you need it the most.
So you're saying that they slice a section of my scalp off of one part of my head and sew it to another part of my head?
No. Well, I mean, if you're interested in the surgical procedure, the hair transplantation, that basically what they're doing is removing that a piece of skin tissue, and then they make these tiny little apertures, which are like basically little paper cuts, where you want your hair to fall back on, and they transplant that on your scalp.
On second thought, I think I've reconsidered. Thank you very much for your candor.
Welcome to Wigs.com, the wig expert.
May I ask who I'm speaking with?
You may. My name is Brian Thompson.
How can I help you today, Brian?
I'm interested in ordering a wig, but before I do, I just have one question. Does wearing a wig require any kind of painful surgery?
No, not at all. Yeah, it's just meant to go on top of the head and wrap the head. It's not meant to be, you know, adhered to the head or anything like that, unless you wanted it to.
What do you mean, unless I wanted it? It's possible for me?
Like, you can adhere the piece to your head using adhesives, like tapes and glues.
Oh, so I can just tape or glue it to my head.
Right, that's correct. You can glue it to the head.
Perfect. I do have some glue on hand. I'm ready to get started with my order. And now a word from our sponsor. Did you purchase a subscription to the Luminary podcast service and immediately realize you had no good reason to do such a thing? You may be entitled to compensation. Please contact the legal experts at Dostert, Henning, and Coveney for more information about how you can receive relief for the unintended consequences of your rash decision. Thank you for listening to Whatever Happened to Pizza at McDonald's. Personalized copies of my best-selling book, How to Be an Investigative Journalist, are now available. For more information, visit howtobeaninvestigativejournalist.com. For exclusive bonus podcasts and other premium benefits, please consider joining our Patreon at patreon.com/pizzaatmcd's. Do you know what happened to Pizza at McDonald's? Do you remember it? Please send all correspondence to pizzaatmcdonalds@gmail.com. For more information, please visit our attractive website at www.pizzaatmcdonalds.com. There you will find links to our Twitter and Instagram pages, as well as to our newsletter and Tee Public store, where you may purchase quality Whatever Happened to Pizza at McDonald's merchandise. I'm Brian Thompson.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.